Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in chiropractic doctor, Dr. Marcos Perry-Valeris. Marcos, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys.
We're really grateful to have you, man. You're the first medical professional that we've had, and so you're breaking new ground for us.
Awesome. I love breaking new boundaries. That's my favorite thing to do.
So. Heck yeah. So I know chiropractic is not where the journey started. Let's press rewind a little bit. Take me back to New York. When you start, I'm guessing it's baseball that gets you on the track where you start to find mentors and what that starts to feel like in the beginning.
Yeah, so I was playing baseball up until, that was my passion, my biggest passion. I always go all in when I love something, and I was playing at Cortland in upstate New York, and after trying to find an option to go into a next profession after baseball.
How young were you when you started?
I was probably 5 years old. I had to teach my parents how to play baseball because they were musicians, actually. So my dad was a musician, and my mom was not really into baseball as much, but I brought it when I was in kindergarten, and one of my friends showed me a baseball card, and I was like, oh, that sounds cool. I want to do that. So that's kind of how that started. But in school, when I was my senior year of college, I was pretty much going for physical therapy. That was my plan the whole time. And I did a bunch of shadowing, following physical therapists around. And after a couple different places, it's a great profession. It just wasn't so much for me because it was pretty repetitive over and over. Mm-hmm. But that was what I was planning to do. Then in my very last semester, my senior year of college, a chiropractor came and spoke to one of our classes before going to our next stage. And he just talked about the principles chiropractic has, are the philosophy of the profession, and that really kind of hooked me. And I was like, I feel like I could help a lot more people in this world doing that than physical therapy. So I just went to chiropractic school and applied with maybe a month left of my undergrad. Mm-hmm. And never went to a chiropractor, never got adjusted, just kind of went on the whim, and then I just ended up in school, and now I'm here.
So where does the road start for you when you start to find these people that can help you and you develop this thirst to be able to go all in? Where does this start? That's why I'm saying, I was guessing sports was the start of this.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just felt pulled to go into the profession. I show up to chiropractic college, and I didn't even know that there were different forms of chiropractic. So our office is named the Gonstead Chiropractic Clinic of Sarasota, mm-hmm. And it's named after the system we use of applying chiropractic, actually. Dr. Gonstead started it in the 1920s and created this system that was amazing. And when I got to chiropractic school, I like to follow who I think is the smartest in the room and learn from the best to eventually try to become the best. And that was my wife and I's mentor, Dr. Scott Meisel, and he showed us a different standard of chiropractic, and we tried other groups, other techniques, other systems, and nothing was as meticulous and specific and focused for each individual as Gonstead. So then I just went under his wing, followed him, and learned more about what Gonstead was, and eventually became obsessed with it.
So how do you develop this tactic to be able to put it into play? When's the first time when you find the smartest person in the room, or who was the first smartest person to help you where it dawns on you, this is how I can start to level myself up no matter what I'm doing?
Yeah, it was really, he was one of our professors in our, that was teaching our first quarter class, so our very first week or in school. And
you didn't really have that feeling until you got there?
Until I met him and heard him talk and his background.
So he was the first smartest person in the room?
So he was not the first. He was, because we had orientation and other, we got to meet nearly everyone.
No, so. I mean, like, you hadn't had that prior in either an education portion or in athletics where there was someone around you that hit you that hard or became like such a beacon for this is where the knowledge lies.
Yeah, well, my college baseball coach and also my high school baseball coach, they always were just a step above in the way that they cared so much that they would put in extra time and effort to be great at the expense of their time, their money, their efforts. They always did that extra mile. And every professor at the school kind of talked about their background, what they did. And out of the entire school, there's maybe only two or three that practiced for over 30 years and came back to teach students.
Wow.
Where the majority of them actually didn't really practice much or didn't practice at all. and are teaching. So he had that experience. He practiced for over 30 years in Minnesota, came down to teach to give back to the profession, and was always hosting extracurricular things for you to better yourself, where everything else was kind of when I would ask, I ask a lot of questions whenever I'm around anything. So when I would ask a question, a lot of other systems, techniques, groups, teachers, they would just say, just because, or because I said so. Mm. Usually for me, that's not a good enough answer. Dr. Meisel would really break down step by step why and the logic behind each part of what we do. So that drove me, and that kind of held me in that if any patient I see ever asks a question, I want to answer why. I don't want to say just because or not have any logic reason behind it. So that was the big thing for me.
Do you find that to be the experience of a lot of patients when they come to you, that they've either had somebody in the past just kind of give them these aren't the droids you're looking for type service? Is that one of the things that separates your discipline and practice?
Yeah, I mean, I would say over 75% of our practice has been to a chiropractor and hated it, and almost they wouldn't be in our office if they weren't going through something, and they were at the last wit's end, in a sense, because a lot of chiropractors, unfortunately, right now, they just do the same thing for every person. There's no sense of finding an issue and trying to reason and find what's the root causes. It's just kind of throwing mud at a wall and seeing what sticks, in a shotgun approach as opposed to a sniper approach of finding what that problem is and how do we address that properly. So, I mean, a lot of our profession, unfortunately, has taken a just a mill effect type of standard of care as opposed to focusing on each individual when you're with them.
Do you think that that's one of the roots of the negative connotations of chiropractic work in general?
Yes. I'm one of chiropractic's biggest devil's advocate almost. I have seen, and because my background of never being adjusted before I went to chiropractic college, it gave me that perspective of why do more people not go to a chiropractor?
Right.
Why was my family telling me up until I went to chiropractic school, you don't want to go because they'll either hurt you or they're a scam or they'll steal your money?
Right.
So why is that perception there? And that kind of was always my perspective, where a lot of students, when they go to school, they've had a great experience or they were mentored by someone before to give them that extra reason to just be comfortable with it. And I was never comfortable with it because I never went until I went to school.
That's got to be pretty rare.
Yeah, it was. And my wife, actually, she had the exact same entry into chiropractic too, because she never went to a chiropractor before. She was shadowing a PT and a chiropractor was at their office, and she actually shadowed that chiropractor one day and just fell in love with it. So it was pretty cool that we came together to form as one, but also how different of a perspective we have and why we are so meticulous and so, and trying to explain why things are happening to people. Because in my opinion, there's not a single human being in this world that wouldn't benefit from chiropractic care, but it takes the right chiropractic care to get that.
What do you think the nature of that fact is?
I think a lot of it is a lot of chiropractors don't understand our philosophy and what we are supposed to do. So chiropractors are supposed to find, the word that we use in our field is the vertebral subluxation. So what that is when there is a miscommunication between the brain and body in a very simple sense. So it's like a roadblock into the way the brain sends a signal to the body, and the body tells the brain what's going on. They're not on the same page, in a sense. So our job is to find where that roadblock is and trace everything back neurologically. So we're focusing on the nerve system and how that communication is, not just trying to get more motion, not trying to decrease pain. We're trying to see physiologically in the body, where is it not functioning optimally, and try and trace back where that miscommunication is. Because if you're not born without an organ, your organ wasn't malformed when you were born. The only other option really for dysfunction is the brain and body are not communicating properly, and that message isn't being sent out well and interpreted well. So that's where we're trying to trace it all the way back to say, okay, what is the root cause to X, Y, and Z symptoms, not just let's try and remove symptoms. So that philosophy of trying to know what our purpose is, of trying to restore optimized function to a person, that is where the difference usually lies, because people don't take enough time to go into our philosophy.
Is that the fundamental difference in ethos between chiropractic work and physical therapy? It's not just a range of motion and pain alleviation?
And we're looking at the whole system. So for an example, if someone has, my wife's a great example. She was at 12 years old. She had horrible menstrual cycles, was put on birth control. That was quote unquote solving the problem.
Right.
It didn't.
That's fairly common.
Yeah. It numbs the symptom. It doesn't solve the problem. Then you fast forward to, let's just say 6 years later, she's had 5 knee surgeries.
Oof.
3 ACLs, a meniscus, and a patella.
Good grief.
All in the same knee.
Oof.
All in the same knee. So she stopped.
You need a Terminator
sports.
Knee at that point.
Yeah, right. No, it's a pretty messed up knee. But her other knee, she says it's perfect. It's the best knee ever.
The other one's not so good.
Yeah.
Shout out left knee or whatever. Right.
Right.
Knee.
Yeah. So then you fast forward to when I met her. She was so constipated that she would have to go to the hospital to get an enema or give herself enemas to go to the bathroom every 3 weeks because that she wouldn't go. So
as a result of pain management.
Just as a result of her body not functioning.
Oh, gotcha.
Properly. So that's where
this is the broad stroke.
Yeah.
Thing.
So then we look back at the whole system and why are all these different things occurring? If someone comes in to me with low back pain, okay, where is that? How is it presenting? Yes. But also, do you ever have constipation? Do you ever have other things going on? So I can trace back physiologically what else is expressing abnormal function, because pain is only 10% of a nerve function. The other 90% has nothing to do with pain at all. Mm. It's all functional things that our body does every given second. So for her, as we were practicing in school, we were adjusting her L3 vertebrae. Little did we know, all of a sudden, her knees never felt better. She goes to the bathroom regularly, and she's off birth control, and her menstrual cycles are completely regulated. We actually just had 2 kids within 2 years, so that's where that ended up, with getting that spot fixed for her.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. But it all stemmed back from that same issue, and also the way her pelvis is putting more stress on her knee. So that's, in a chiropractic viewpoint, we're looking at the whole system, because I've had a foot take care of headaches and migraines. I've had the top of the neck take care of radiating pain down both legs before, because the body's one organ. It all functions together. So to kind of separate into parts of, oh, that's a bad knee, let's work on these muscles to get that knee stronger. Yes, that's very, very important without a doubt, but we're trying to look at it in the perspective of where did that even start and why is that happening and where else is that not working right? So
when you say that there's not a person or barely a person that couldn't stand to use some chiropractic work, what's the nature of that? What would you say that you would see most people come in need an XYZ? You know, we all need our tires rotated, or what are we working with?
Our world is not designed for spinal health by any means. We sit a lot, we bend and twist. We don't do things that are great for our spine, and every bit of our world is in a flex state. So even the way we're sitting, our shoulders are forward, we're hunched down, our lumbar spine is completely straight because of the angle we're sitting at, and that is a stressful position. It doesn't allow the body to distribute it evenly. So the biggest thing about chiropractic and our philosophy is there are 3 universal stressors that stress us out in a daily basis. Traumas, that's big traumas like car accidents and hard falls, but also small micro traumas like repetitive motions that are bad for spinal biomechanics, poor lifting posture, poor sitting a lot, driving a lot to work, far drives, not doing things that are great for our spinal health. And then you also have these other 2 things that not a lot of people focus on, but we like to look at is thoughts. So your stress levels,
right?
Any major fears, our mental and emotional health, and toxins, the food we eat, what we drink, the air we breathe. Are we getting first, second, or even third hand smoke? Inhalation from someone that smokes outside, but they smell like smoke and come in, our body still metabolizes those chemicals. So if we have all of these different stressors going on, if we have a backpack of life, there are different rocks based on how stressful our system's under. But it's like adding rocks to that backpack, and our body goes from being stress resistive, which we're designed to be, to a stress vulnerable state. And then they go in, bend down to tie their shoe, and their back blows out. Right. It wasn't the weight of the shoelace that blew their back out. It was the accumulation of every stress on adaptive that added up to it. So that's kind of the principle behind it, is we're trying to see, where is your body stress vulnerable and how do we restore it back to stress resistant? So chiropractic is focused on health and optimal function, where a lot of medicine and other medical subsections are focused on disease and death. So Dr. Gans had said, in one of his most famous quotes, are chiropractic is the study of health and what causes man to live. Medicine is the study of disease and what causes someone to die. Mm. It's very true.
Right.
In a sense, they're trying to fight a disease. We're trying to say that the body's strong, and how do we restore its functionality? Because if you break your arm and you put a cast on your arm, that cast doesn't heal your arm. It stops you from being silly and using it when you shouldn't, but your body heals it.
Right.
If you cut yourself open, same thing. So we know the body is designed to be self-healing, self-regulating, and self-determining, and we're trying to unlock its potential when it's not functioning right.
Interesting. So talk to me a little bit about the Gonstead method and the things that are different from what people might think of as traditional chiropractic routine, because I know there is definitely it's its own lane.
Yeah, so there's about over 150 different techniques in chiropractic. The Gonstead system is a system that's pretty much a applicable way to apply our philosophy. So the first thing we always do is we use an instrument, and that instrument detects heat from side to side, and I run it up and down the spine every single visit before I ever adjust someone. All that tells me is where there is irritation to a nerve. So all of a sudden, out of every segment in your spine, I'm looking at 3 or 4 spots as areas that are actually having nerve irritation that aren't adapting.
And how does it detect that?
So I actually have an example in my backpack, if I can grab it.
Yeah, 100%. Love an example. That's all right. Seth likes a reason to edit.
That's like show and tell. It's my favorite.
Yeah.
I'm not cutting this out. No.
All right. So the first thing we always do is every patient we see is either in a gown as a female or a male that prefers a gown, or the men just take their shirt off too. And that's always so we can see the spine. So seeing the spine, not the spine, but the skin, the way that it's presenting, is there swelling in a certain area at one spot? Is there atrophy from the muscle because the nerve hasn't been working for a long time? It's just giving us some insight. Then we always use this instrument, and all it does is detect temperature from side to side on each probe. So if we had a spine, every segment has a nerve that comes out this way. And I run this from the skull all the way down to the tailbone, and it gives me a specific reading if there is irritation and swelling on the nerve at that area. So I'll mark it with a little skin marking pencil. Then after that, I'll feel the area, I'll feel the skin, I'll feel if the muscle, I'll see if it's showing signs, anything less than optimal in comparison to the rest of the body. Then we take full spine spinographs. They're x-rays, but we call them spinographs in chiropractic. So of a side view and a front to back view. So that shows us the way the body looks as a global, as a whole, but also segmentally. How is the segment looking? Is it in the area that the nerve comes out? Does the disc space look smaller, bigger, wedged in a certain way where it's open in the front when it shouldn't be? Then we do an x-ray analysis to really dive deeper into it. But the last thing we do is move the patient around to feel, is that segment working properly over the disc? That's where it all starts, is the disc, and then it makes the bone misaligned. So we use the bone as a lever, pretty much, to take pressure off of the nerve by restoring its alignment with the disc itself. So we do all 6 of those steps every single visit before we make an adjustment. So by the time we go to adjust the segment, we know that that one needs to get an adjustment so we can adapt better. So we do we have almost so many different tests to see, does this area need to be adjusted or not? So, I mean, we maybe adjust 2, at most 3 segments on a person on a given visit, because if the other areas aren't having nerve irritation, after you take care of the major one, the rest of the body figures it out. So
right.
we can differentiate between a problem and a compensation for a problem based on our analysis.
Yeah, and that's something I'm sure you see quite a lot of.
Oh, yeah. If you go on YouTube and search chiropractic adjustment, you will see anywhere from 6 to 8, even 10 different things adjusted on a person. And that's not chiropractic. That's things that you can see physical therapists do, osteopaths do. That's manipulation. In chiropractic, we adjust segments to be a very specific direction at a very specific time to restore that communication.
So the big fork in the road is kind of the analogy you made earlier. It's not the spray and pray. It's the sniper rifle.
Yep, exactly. So we're trying to make sure we're pinpointing where is the body not adapting in that present moment, and where is it stuck in a past moment from one of those stresses that we talked about. So if you right. had a bad car accident 30 years ago and your neck is in a reverse state, that stemmed all the way back from there. And we can see based on this, the space that the disc should be, about how long something's been there. Has it been there for 6 months because it's really big and fat and swollen, or has it been there for 30 years because it looks like it's bone on bone? Ah. So we can see about how long something happened. And there are so many, I have it on a daily basis. When I go through review findings with a patient, I'm like, you said you weren't in a car accident, but the way this looks, you had a pretty hard injury or fall. Like, oh yeah, I did like fall off a cliff 25 years ago. I'm like,
right.
Well, I would have loved to know that, you know?
Yeah.
But that's where we can, it tells a full story and we can really understand what the person is going through currently, but also what they went through in the past to really help them out.
So is the using the instrument like this and giving yourself a clearer roadmap before you make an adjustment, is that part of the Gonstead method?
100%, because a lot of things can feel tight, a lot of things can feel stuck, but that doesn't mean we need to put a thrust into their spine there. So if one area at the bottom is the start of that tightness and stuck area, and that's giving me a reading, and then 5 segments up, all of them are tight and stuck, which one do you do? Well, this tells me exactly where I need to be. So it really pinpoints that location for us where we need to adjust.
So when you see some of these people that have traumas that you can see from any one of those 3 reasons, and you can say to yourself, okay, this probably happened X decades ago, mm-hmm. what's the likelihood that someone like that can, I don't want to say recover, but not experience those symptoms? Can you reverse, for want of a better way of putting it, things like that?
So in for us, there's limitations of matter.
Right.
So if one of the segments has a compression injury where it looks like a pancake compared to the rest, that bone won't regrow, but
right.
we want to make sure you're functional. We're only focused on functionality and optimizing health and functionality for the body you have. So there may be some limitations. If there's a 85-year-old patient that has a 90-degree scoliosis, I'm never going to tell them I'm looking to straighten your spine. That's
yeah.
not going to happen. But
right.
we want to make sure you can function and your body is able to be the best version of itself it can be. It can be optimized. So we're always worrying about optimizing every bit of the function of the person. And I want to know where any symptom, even if they think chiropractic isn't involved, what are things you're expressing in your daily lives that are not working to its best potential? And then once I can hear that, then I can start to see, is it something that is a chiropractic issue due to a subluxated segment in the spine, or is it not, and it's something else, then I know I can refer to someone else. So we kind of like to stay in our lane of chiropractic. There are physical therapists that we refer to. There are other professionals that we refer to when it's not what we need to do, and we can differentiate that because we have a clear kind of path ahead.
How often do you do that?
Pretty often. I mean, if there is someone that has had longstanding injuries from the past, and they need muscle work, whether it's massage, whether it's strength, whether it's stretching, whatever soft tissue stuff that also had damage to it, I have a person that I always refer to because I know they take their profession so seriously and they stay right where they need to be to get that part better, and I'm going to focus on the nervous system function while they're going to work on the soft tissue side of things, and then everything gets to be optimized.
And you would do those things in lockstep, or when you recommend someone to PT, they go, or whatever, they do that first and then come to you?
It's, we're we kind of work people through a it depends where they are. So if they're coming in with so I had a patient that came in that she was getting a massage, and that massage therapist thought it was a good idea to just twist her neck, try to push on her spine in the back, and she got up and she couldn't move her neck.
Oh.
So she was told to go to physical therapy, and she knew to come to us as well. And we were working on her, but it was too much for her body at that time because her body was in a crisis mode. So sometimes too many things happening at once is too much for the system. So
right.
She decided to just come to us for about a month. And then once she was at a state where she seemed stable, then it was time to strengthen and get the muscle work done there. So it's all about the timing. If they're just in a lifestyle state where they're like, I feel I'm perfect, I just want to make sure I stay perfect.
Yeah.
Then if we're seeing them once every 2 weeks, once a month, depending on how we're what we're finding in their body, that's where we only check on them once or twice a month, and they go and do their other aspects of living a healthy lifestyle, like eating well, going to a personal trainer, getting massages, getting those other things done. And we're just making sure we're monitoring to prevent things from coming on.
So there are people you do see in a preventative case where you're only seeing them once or twice a month. That's news to me. I didn't know people did chiropractic work in that capacity. Yeah. What's a standard regimen for someone who has, like, I don't want to say an injury, but some type of symptom? Do you have to see him 3 times a week, once a week? Is there a standard?
So that's kind of another thing that's different about us, is we make our recommendations based on what we find in their exam and their analysis. So I never give the same exact, they may be similar, but I never will just have a cookie cutter approach to anything. I mean, if I'm seeing that their spine looks a certain way, the disc shape looks a certain way where it's been an older injury, it takes more care initially to get that settled. If someone comes in before they're in a crisis mode, then we never need to start them really excessive at all. It's kind of just working through it at a steady pace, but also not in a shotgun approach pace of seeing you 3 times a week. We had a couple of patients that came in from, they went to another chiropractor, had their analysis done, and before they adjusted them, they said, okay, you need 3 times a week for 2 months, twice a week for 2 months, and it was like a 60-visit plan. And
Lord,
that's, you have no idea.
That's a commitment.
It's just like a cookie-cutter approach to get people signed up instead of every time we see someone. I don't think I've given a plan to someone over maybe 20 visits because I want to get a new x-ray. I want to get a new nervous system scan. I want to get an updated set of information because if they're a different person than when they walked in and I'm utilizing those x-rays on each visit, I need new films
because
they're not the same person that they were in that crisis mode. So it's very individualized depending on what we find as opposed to just a standard.
Do you think that cookie cutter kind of approach to things and the, you know, maybe only taking one set of x-rays and then operating for 60 visits, do you think that's one of the reasons why the efficacy of chiropractic work comes into question?
Yeah, and I also think that's why we don't have a lot of respect as a profession to other healthcare professionals.
Right.
Because it's not logical to do that. It's strictly about making money in that sense if you're doing that. Because there's no sense of patient care that just doesn't make sense, you know? So that's why we do things the way we do it, because that's what is considered a scam almost. And that's where my family would say, you don't want to go because it's a scam. So I'm like, okay, I never want people to feel that way. I want them to say, okay, I understand why I need this. And this plan makes sense. If they have questions, I say, please talk to me. I want to know what you're thinking because I do need to make sure we're on the same page because healing is always a two-way street.
That's not a thing you commonly hear.
Yeah.
Healthcare professionals. So it seems like, I shouldn't say it seems like, you definitely do have a broad swath of background knowledge for all of this stuff. And you've got a unique perspective being that you weren't a chiropractic patient coming into being a chiropractor. So talk to me a little bit about the road between going to college and ending up with your own practice.
Yeah. I always wanted to go and practice under someone that's been doing it for a while. That was always my plan. Mm. But then my wife and I got married and we had kids. So we decided it would be best to open up and rely on each other to help each other. We went very hard and still go hard in our continuing education. So we probably go to anywhere from 15 to 20 chiropractic seminars a year and travel to Wisconsin, Mount Orb, Iowa, all over the country just to keep learning and keep getting better. That's what we did as students. So by the time we graduated, we felt very prepared to help people. Because, I mean, in our student clinics when we were working at for the school, we were seeing so many patients that the school never saw before. I think we had almost like a record of how many people we saw because we were spreading the chiropractic message, getting results, and then they would tell their friends and family to come, and then they would tell their friends and family to come because they saw the value of it. Any age benefits from chiropractic care. The first adjustment I gave both of my sons, our first son got his first adjustment at 7 minutes old. Our second son had it at about 2 or 3 minutes old.
Good grief.
And it's a very different application, of course. But, I mean, for me, if I can make sure that our child is functioning at the most optimal level from the at the soonest time possible,
right,
that means every second from that adjustment on, they're functioning better than they did before. So they're going to sleep better. They're going to latch better when they're eating on mom. They're not going to have feeding issues. They're going to poop better. They're going to fall asleep. They're going to do so many different things that we see so commonly with kids that we see. They aren't sleeping well. They're not eating well, and they're not pooping well. That's a big three with kids.
I was going to say, that's their three battlefronts right there.
So that's where, I mean, if they're having anything, kids express things differently than adults. So it's just so important to know that chiropractic is something that is looking to optimize an individual despite what they have. If they're not sleeping through the night, if they're waking up in the middle of the night from sleeping, that tells me something different than they can't fall asleep at night. So that's where I really, really ask a lot of questions, and I can answer them now because I ask questions and my mentors answered for me. So that's kind of where we try and give that to each patient. And the most common thing we hear in our office is no one's ever taken this much time to check me in any healthcare field. And I never knew this, or I never knew this was related to this. Like, there's a huge gap in the healthcare field of educating patients on what they're going through. And that's something my wife and I are very passionate about, is empowering our patients to know what their body is functioning like, what their body is, what it's expressing, and how that makes sense for where they need to go at what time, instead of relying on Dr. Google, who is the worst in the world.
Yeah, right.
It tells you you're dying every time.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
So you have some things that are common, or at least you can recognize the patterns once experience unveils them for you. Mm-hmm. What's some of the things you've come across that have really surprised you? What have uncommon things you've been able to gain some ground on, or real curveballs?
I'll be honest. I'm not surprised ever when chiropractic works. I'm never surprised because it's such a simple, logical philosophy of why it does help people get better. And a quote that's in our office, we have a big mural of Dr. Gonstead and our mentors that helped us. And one of my favorite quote ever is, remember, chiropractic always works. When it does not seem to, question your application, but never question the principle of chiropractic. Hmm. And that's an accountability thing that our profession lacks heavily on, because the amount of people I've seen that have had surgery because their chiropractor said, oh, chiropractic's not going to help you. That's not true. That chiropractor couldn't help them. But unless it's too far gone structurally and the limitation of matter is there to a point that
you're right,
it can't, like, if there's,
you still got physics to live by.
Of course. If the hip is bone on bone and there's no material there to protect it and cushion it, that's something that we may be able to help symptomatically. But to correct that root cause, you should have came in 30 years ago at that point, and we can't turn back time. So the biggest issue usually is it's never too late to start it's never too early to start chiropractic. It's usually only too late once things have gotten down a path so far that the body can't overcome what's there.
So in a nutshell, what do you think are some of those different fundamental principles that you have, thanks to your mentors and the Gonstead, Dr. Gonstead specifically, that other people are ignoring? Is it just the thorough nature of it?
So chiropractic is like there's three aspects to it that are designed to interweave with each other to answer and help each other out. So first is our philosophy. That gives us the right viewpoint when we're taking care of a patient to know how to interpret information. The other is the science. The science is there, and that's why I can communicate to someone that is on the complete opposite end of the healthcare spectrum, believing in drugs and surgery being the cure-all for everything, because the science is very simple. The anatomy, the physiology, the way the body's supposed to work, and the functionality of it. So the science helps us apply our philosophy and explain why chiropractic is beneficial. Then the art of chiropractic is actually the adjustment, your analysis, and finding the problem. So if you're not putting equal efforts into bettering yourself in all three, then you're going to be negligent of the other, and then you don't get to get the results that, I mean, Dr. Gonson himself is the example that we look at, because he lived in Mount Hope, Wisconsin, which you know.
Yes.
And that town has how many people, do you think?
14.
Exactly. So he had to build a hotel and an airstrip on his clinic. His clinic was 37,000 square feet.
Dang.
And he saw 250 people a day from about 6 a.m. until 2 a.m. that next morning.
Good Lord.
He saw more people in a week than the amount of people that lived in Mount Hope, Wisconsin. And even, I mean, by the end of his career, he was seeing millions and millions of people that would – I have a bunch of patients, actually, that were adjusted either by him or adjusted by the people that took over after him. And they would travel from all over the world. Yeah, there's a map in his clinic with little tacks in the areas that he saw patients from. And, like, each tack, like, based on the color, one of them is worth – 250,000. The other one is worth like 2,000. And you have people from all over coming and staying for a month straight to get better. And then they would leave. And a lot of the other healthcare professionals left Mount Horeb at the time because he was helping people without introducing anything from outside the body into it. He was just adjusting them, finding the problem, and allowed the body to heal itself naturally. And that's where he was the epitome of what chiropractic is. He was the chiropractor.
But not all chiropractic kind of lives and dies on that principle, correct?
Which principle?
That you got to solve it globally. They seem to, or I shouldn't say globally, that they can't find the specific thing. They just kind of lay you on the table and crack your neck. You know what I mean?
Well, that's a huge issue in our profession right now. People don't take the time to sit and talk to patients, listen to them, don't ask the right questions to find out more, and they just blindly do the same eight things. I had a patient today that came in with their wife, and they said, I had low back pain. She had headaches. We got the exact same adjustment every single time we went there. That doesn't make sense.
Right.
You know, that's not applying it to that individual and finding out what's going on. So it's that's definitely a big problem in our profession.
So when you say you can create, or I shouldn't say you create, but you allow the opportunities for the body to heal itself, mm-hmm. we all know that, because like the analogy you gave, you cut yourself, it heals. Okay, what is going on there? We can all talk about platelets coagulating and all that good jive, but when you're talking about, you know, solving these issues that kind of stem from phantom land,
yeah.
what is going on when that alleviates?
So there are... Let's keep it very simple. There are two pathways that happen. The brain telling the body what to do and the body telling the brain what's going on. So the body telling the brain is through the sensory nerve. That's going up the spinal column to the brain. That nerve is letting the brain know what is going on inside my body and outside my body. Every single cell communicates to the brain at every given second. So that happens continuously. Then the brain interprets it and tells the body, how do you adapt to that situation that is going on at that very moment? Whenever that cycle is interrupted, the subluxation itself affects that output side. So it affects the brain telling the body what to do. So if you eat a jelly donut Your stomach cells tell your brain, I have a jelly donut in my stomach. The brain says, okay, I need 10 millimoles of acid to digest that donut. If there's a subluxation at one of the areas that go to the stomach, it decreases the output that it's supposed to give because it's interfering with the nerve signal. So then instead of giving 10 millimoles, it only gives 6. All of a sudden, we get acid reflux an hour and a half later because the food ferments, and then more acid is produced and it comes back up. So that's where we're tracing that back. And then once we make that adjustment, now every moment from that point forward, the brain sending it to that organ, cell, or tissue, whatever it is, it's for that present moment in time. The issue comes when it's a long-standing injury, and now the disc material is weakened. The ligaments around that spinal segment's weakened, so we continue our same stressors. Then we keep that pattern of stress going. It slowly starts to go back into that comfortable pattern. That's where we determine how many, what's the frequency of visits based on, okay, what, how long has this been there? What are your current stressors? Okay, how do we stay ahead of that? So every time I see you, you're at a plateau from last adjustment. I'm not seeing you when you felt good for 3 days and then I see you in 7
you're
and
right.
Now you're back to where you were, because that's just a roller coaster up and down. So we just want to gain ground. Once we make that adjustment, the body will use that adjustment force to get everything where it needs to be, and then the brain and body can communicate in a very fluent and non-interfered way. So we're looking to restore that communication so the right things happen. Because when the wrong things are happening, there's a compensation mechanism that happens too, and then now the liver starts working harder, the gallbladder starts working harder, the heart starts working harder. Then you have people that have high blood pressure after eating.
Right.
Is it because the stomach's not producing enough acid, or is it because, and the heart has to speed up because it's in a crisis mode, or is it because there's something wrong with the heart? If you go to a cardiologist, there's something wrong with the heart. If you go to a GI doc, there's something wrong with the stomach. So we're trying to see it as, okay, the body's supposed to work this way. What happens when this isn't working right? Where are findings telling us that this isn't adapting for its present moment? Can we make sense of this? And that's kind of where we come from.
So when you're talking about, you know, obviously a cardiologist is going to say your heart, obviously GI is going to say it's your guts. I hate to put you on the spot like this, but do you feel that they're wrong in saying that? Or do you feel like that's just the entirely wrong tree to bark up and they're just right barking up the wrong tree?
And that happens with chiropractic too. Do we think everything is the spine when it's something else going on?
Right.
The heart may be functioning in a dysfunctional state for its moment. For example, you have acid reflux, but you also get high blood pressure too. Which one's the cause though? You can help the symptom by giving blood pressure medication of the heart, but is that getting to the root cause? Because if they still have acid reflux, that heart is depressed by that blood pressure medication, which has a whole boatload of negative effects if you just look at the things that's in there.
Of course.
So now the body's at a worse state after that, in our opinion, because we're not addressing what is causing the compensatory effect after of the big thing that started this whole cycle. So we're trying to peel back the layers to get to the root, as opposed to just looking at the superficial edge to say, okay, this is going on, so we have to treat this and treat that. So this is a good analogy. If you're trying to find a fake $20 bill and I'm trying to find a fake $20 bill, and you study all the different papers, all the different inks, all the different fonts, all the different colors, you will always be behind that person that is creating the fake $20 bill. Because by the time you find out all those things, there's something new there.
Right.
So we're trying to say, okay, this is what a healthy $20, a real $20 bill looks like. This one doesn't have that same perspective. It doesn't have the same viewpoint of a real $20 bill. That's fake. I don't care why it's fake. I know it's fake. I have to, and in chiropractic, we're trying to see how do we trace it back to find that root issue.
Right.
So it's a different perspective that allows us to really, we don't want to rely on something else to help us with symptomatology. We want our body to take care of it naturally. If you're given a medication, that's a lifelong thing now, because once you stop taking that medication, all the symptoms come back. Why? Because the root problem wasn't addressed. So that's why we're trying to trace it back to say, why is that causing that problem? How do we restore that communication? And then what is the body's functionality there? And we've seen things from seizures, from traumatic brain injuries to traumatic injuries where people can't walk without help, and trying to trace that back from that old injury and getting it back to restored. We've had patients that have had seizures constantly. They've been on every medication possible.
Because that's a tricky one to diagnose and treat.
Yeah. So is it a brain signaling problem with the electricity of it? Can be. Is it that the brain and the body aren't on the same page for its environment, so every sensation coming to the brain thinks it is in a crisis mode and needs to shut down? That's a possibility too. So we try and see how that how we can backtrack that. And the seizure cases we've been seeing, they don't have them anymore because the brain and body are working on the same page. So it's never us ever doing anything, and we're never healing a single person. All right. We're doing is removing an obstruction for the body to do what it's naturally designed to do.
So that being said, I know that your stance on it or your opinion generally is that chiropractic can work. What are some of the more challenging things you've seen people overcome through your practice or people using similar methods on patients?
Yeah. I mean, we've had patients that have had blood pressure up to over 200 over like 150.
Good Christ.
And it was...
How do you not blow a tube out with that one?
Yeah. No, and it's serious. I mean, they can't even... They have to lay down for a second in the middle of checking them or someone having a seizure. And they have tremors or constant things that are just neurologically dysfunctional. Those big neurological ones, MS symptoms all the time. MS is, and fibromyalgia, I think, are overly diagnosed because it's... A diagnosis is really just an accumulation of symptoms. Okay, you have all these check boxes. This right. is the label you get.
Okay.
For us, we're saying, okay, this symptom is telling us this about the nerve system. This is this. This is this. This is this. Okay, where do these go to, and how could they be not functioning right? And then that's how we're backtracking it. So, like I said, there are so many different cases like that. I had a patient this week that she had incontinence. Every time she tried, she would have maybe a 2-minute warning that, or not even 2 minutes, like 30-second warning, she had to go to the bathroom. If she didn't get to the bathroom in 30 seconds, she would have a bowel movement and urinate in her pants that very moment if she didn't go to the bathroom. We've been seeing her for maybe 2 weeks, and she hasn't had a single accident since. And it's strictly because we're trying to trace back where that could be coming from. So it's...
And you think the relief... physiologically she's having is actually neurologically? This is the fundamental?
So the nervous system, this is accepted in, despite wherever your viewpoint is, the nervous system controls every single organ, cell, and tissue in your body. That is the master control unit. It's a neuro everything, a neuromuscular system, a neuroimmune system, a neuro, you name it. Every system depends on the nerve to tell it what to do. So if the
and likewise what's happening.
Yes. So if the brain can't understand what its environment is internally, that's an autoimmune issue. Because the brain doesn't know what's going on inside of itself, and then it's not functioning right.
Right. Man, I know that life
stuff. If the body doesn't, or the brain doesn't know what's going on externally, we can't properly adapt to that situation. And then all of a sudden we are cold all the time, or we have thyroid issues, or we have headaches, we have seizures, all of this different stuff going on. So if the brain can't know what's going on, it can't send the right signal out for that moment. When that's happening, you're not living in an optimal state of health because the miscommunication is going on. So the nerve system just strictly controls every function of every cell in the body. And that's just a scientific fact. So for us now, we're trying to see, okay, where's the first area the nerve can have a miscommunication from? The brain is surrounded by the skull. Then it goes through the opening in the skull into the first bone in the neck called the atlas, and it travels down the spinal column till L1, L2. Then there's a filament that surrounds the spinal cord that attaches all the way to the tailbone. So each spinal segment has nerve roots that come out, and then they break out into a huge network to control everything. So when we're hearing symptoms, we're trying to trace it back to where is that exiting from the spine. If there is an issue there, then we're pretty confident we will make a positive change. What that limitation is depends on that individual, their individual stresses, how far things have been there for. But for the most part, the nerve just controls everything. So we're looking for the first area of obstruction. Is it there? Is it in the spine? If it's not, is it in the extremity joints, the knees, the ankles, the wrists, elbows, shoulders, you name it? Every joint in the body has an ability to cause nerve irritation. So, I mean, if a muscle's spasming and making the nerve have irritation, what controls that muscle, the nerve?
Right.
Where do we trace that back to? Okay, this. So that's how we kind of look through it.
So I think I know the answer to this question, but just for my own personal reasons, I got to ask this one. How do you feel about the medications like gabapentin and things like that that are meant to kind of, we don't really know how they're working, but they're meant to kind of rein in the nervous system and either make you not feel pain or whatever the case may be. How do you feel about people that get medicated for those types of issues?
I feel people make their best decision for their current moment in time to try and not be in a world of pain, dysfunction 24/7. I just think that, in my personal opinion, after being a chiropractor and seeing chiropractic, is where is we should see a chiropractor first to see if the body is able to overcome that stressor. Then that's more of a bigger step is the medication is like that. That's on the deep end for us because
that's kind of why I asked.
Gabapentin, all it does is depresses the whole nerve system.
Right.
But there are so many things that are also with a depressed nerve system that are going to cause other compensatory problems.
Right.
So that's kind of where for us, seeing a chiropractor first is so simple and so logical because there's no negative effects that come from that if it's done well. I mean, you might be sore, you might be tight, you might be a little uncomfortable because things are changing, but there's no laundry list of side effects that include cancers, deaths, high blood pressure. I mean, all these things that are so much more intense of a side effect where we're not adding or subtracting anything from the body. We're just introducing a force to allow the body to restore itself.
But people always, I shouldn't say people always, but there is definitely a feeling that there is a downside to chiropractic work. I'm going to go in there and they're going to, you know, my spine's going to come out a question mark. You know what I mean?
Well, that's where the chiropractor needs to apply chiropractic properly. And that's why we've devoted ourselves to the Gonset system because there are so many fail-safes in the system. We turn every rock over. By the time I make an adjustment, I know that body needs that adjustment right there at this time. If we're just hitting everything that feels tight to see how things go, well, yeah, that has much more negative side effects.
So it's just that people's perception is not what you're doing.
That is for sure the biggest thing. I would say if they haven't been to a Gonset chiropractor in the past, it's almost 99.9% of the time they say, I've never been checked this thoroughly. I've never had someone analyze me so closely and individualize my care. If I'm adjusting, say Marcel, for example, if I'm adjusting the same segment, it's not always the exact same angle because he's a different person from the last time I saw him. So if it feels a little bit more problematic at this little portion of that segment, I'm going to adjust it a little differently each time based on how it feels. So every adjustment is different. There's not a same adjustment. It's the same setup and style of adjusting, but the angles and the specificity differs moment to moment because they are a different person each moment you check them. So
what's some of the things you've done to try to educate your potential patients that you're not a guy that's going to whip you on a table and crack your neck real quick?
One thing is we don't usually adjust on the first visit.
Ah.
So we do our exam and our analysis, and I always say I need at least the rest of this day before I adjust you so I can see everything that we just did. So we do x-rays, right? Full spine x-rays, side view and front view. We also do our Gonstead analysis where we're using the instrument, we're making markings, we're feeling, I'm writing down all the areas I'm finding problems at. Then we also do a nerve system scan where we see how the brain communicates to the body with surface EMG, how the body tells the
brain. How does that work? What's surface EMG?
So it's a little electrode that it doesn't do any output. It sees how much energy are your muscles using to sit down and do nothing.
Okay.
Are you using the right amount of energy to sit down and do nothing? Or does certain areas think that you're sprinting? Or do certain areas think you're laying down because the output to that area, to the muscle, is decreased or increased?
Wild. Okay.
So that's how we can see how the brain tells the body what to do for its current moment. Is it in the right state or is it in a different state than what it should be? Then we do a thermography scan where it tells us where is there inflammation at the spinal units. So very similar to this, except not as specific to a spot. So it gives a broad sense of, is there a lot of inflammation at the top of the neck? Okay, that shouldn't be there if we're regulating ourselves properly as an internal system. So that's how the body tells the brain, what's my internal environment? So we can see how that side of the system works. The last one is a heart rate variability scan, which is probably one of the gold standard tests in how healthy a person is. So what it does is you put your hand in this reader, it tracks every heartbeat you have for 3 minutes straight. Then it also sees how much sweat comes off your hand while it's on the scanner. And then it also sees the temperature of your hand when it's on the scanner. So then we get to see, is first your heart adapting from heartbeat to heartbeat? Is it the exact, and everyone on blood pressure medication has a lower scan. That's a very specific reason. So is your heart changing from heartbeat to heartbeat slightly in size, spacing, or is it staying the exact same? If it's changing from heartbeat to heartbeat, that means you're adapting from moment to moment, which is a very good thing. So it's testing very closely those little intricacies. Then we can see, and that's testing how our body controls things we don't consciously control, like our heart beating, lungs breathing, digestion, immune function. If I try and say digest right now, it doesn't.
Do it.
It takes care of itself. Or if we had a thing to breathe and have our heart beat every second,
right,
we would all die because we would forget. It wouldn't happen. So that's where we're testing how that side of the system works. So once we get all the neuro scan done, all the structural scans done, and I find in my Gonstead analysis where the problems are, I can paint a full picture of what's going on with their system. And then I explain it to them so they know, then I adjust them. So that's where I don't just adjust. I usually don't unless they're in a really bad spot where they get carried in, and that happens a bunch.
Yeah.
Very similar to you, Marcel.
Acute situations.
Yes. So that's where we will make an adjustment on that one because that's a very obvious problem because that's so acute. My readings on this are
obvious.
If they can't even move in one little direction, the x-ray shows a very obvious new injury. So that's where I would adjust on that visit. But other than that, we want to take time to see the whole picture before we make that adjustment because we can really see where do we need to be.
Gotcha. Well, we'd normally get you out of here on something fun, but I'm going to get you out of here on a little PSA.
Okay.
I know that one of the things I'm sure you would recommend is to have some preventative chiropractic care, just at least have your foot in the door with a chiropractor so you can have some idea of your overall health. Okay. But barring that, what are some of the things that the rest of us who don't want to become C-shaped humans can do to not end up needing to be seen in an acute situation or something that we've waited too long to address? What are some of the daily things we can do to not be C-shaped?
Yeah, so, I mean, those three T's that I talked about, traumas. So, I mean, we can't – usually it's very hard to avoid macro traumas unless you live a crazy lifestyle and you're just on the edge. So that's the accidents, falls, big things that happen to you. Those are usually hard to avoid. But the micro traumas we can avoid. Are we sitting in a fatigue state where we're slunched forward with our shoulders rolled, our mid-back is curved forward, our low back is just sitting and drooped back, or are we in an extended posture state with our shoulder blades? I always say try and tuck your shoulder blades into your back pocket and then make sure that your chest is tall and your eyes and head are up looking straight at the horizon. Give a little bit of a curve in your low back, and that will be the best state to sit. Sitting is just not good as a whole, because even if you're in a good sitting state, you're still in a poor state for the lower lumbar spine. So
we weren't really built to sit this much.
No, we weren't. So that's where structurally and anatomically we weren't born to be sitting a lot or looking down at our phones or down at our computers. So
right.
That's where making sure everything we're doing is even with eye level and we're upright in as much of an upright position as possible. That helps with the micro traumas. Also, if you're exercising, you're having someone help you if you don't have great form. We got to put the ego kind of down to the side. If we don't know what we're doing, rely on someone that can help you to get the proper form. A lot of injuries happen when we're trying to do things that we're not ready to do.
Good
because
point.
We've seen people do things. So the exercising is very important. And also just exercising as a whole, going for walks, frequent walks. If you're sitting for more than an hour straight and not getting up, that's not great for your spinal health. So every, I would say, under an hour, just get up and take a 5-minute walk around. Even if you're in an office, go to the bathroom and back. Just be up and move. Movement is so important. Then thoughts. Are we having high stressors? Are we taking mindful acts to compensate for those high stressors? So if we're working very hard and we're just going, and we don't get a chance to settle down, practicing things like meditation, just deep breathing, having a good home relationship with your partner or having someone you can talk to, whether it's a therapist or someone that can help you work through your stressors, fears, anxieties, mental conditions, anything that is going on thought-wise, if we don't acknowledge them and address them, they stay deep in our core and it expresses itself out in other ways that we don't even mean to. So if you had a tough day at work and you go home and your 2-year-old drops a glass of milk and you scream at your 2-year-old, you're not mad that the 2-year-old dropped that. You understand he's 2 if we're thinking logically.
Right.
But it's the accumulation of the stress from your day that you just took it out on your 2-year-old.
So yes.
Making sure we're taking steps to handle our stresses and overcome that. Getting plenty of rest. Sleep is so important. I mean, making sure that we're getting at least 6 to 8 hours a night. I know it's hard in this world, but putting the screens down after a certain time, not eating after a certain time. These are all little things, but everything accumulates, whether you do good things for your health or bad things for your health. It's all an accumulation, but are you overall in a net positive or a net negative?
And your profession just gives you a unique perspective on making that assessment.
Yes. So we're trying to make sure that we're removing rocks from that backpack of life and making sure your body is more stress resistive. So your diet, are you avoiding processed foods? The American diet is probably the worst diet there is.
Yeah.
We lack a lot of minerals. We lack a lot of healthy options. And the cheapest thing you can get is the worst thing you can get.
Of course.
That's where making sure our diet is adequate and we're eating and digesting a lot of healthy minerals. That is very important. Making sure we're drinking plenty of water. And not just water with electrolytes. So people don't even realize you can get dehydrated from drinking too much water if you don't have enough electrolytes in there. So making sure you're getting electrolytes in your water is important. Also making sure you're avoiding unnecessary medications. I know that sounds crazy, but if you are taking a medication that your body doesn't need, it has to metabolize that. And
right.
Then it has compensatory effects on other organs, glands, and tissues. So that is another stressor our body has. Smoking, any sort of drug there is, it does put a stress on your body. So finding ways to minimize all of the traumas, thoughts, and toxins, that's how you live a healthy wellness lifestyle. And when anyone comes in our office, we make sure we go through all those. And then we also can...
That's huge.
And show them, hey, you had this happen as a trauma, you had this happen as a trauma, these are your thought stresses, this is something that you've been... veterans, PTSD, this has been going on for all this time, are you getting help for that? Or are you kind of just keeping it in? Your diet is this, you're drinking this much water with this much caffeine, and then you're also on this many medications. So look how many things you have in this backpack of life of rocks compared to how many things you're doing to offset that.
Right.
It needs to be balanced.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
Well, it's been our hour, so I think it's time for us to take a walk.
Yeah.
Dr. Yes, Marcos, it is, right? I very much appreciate you coming down. I had a blast hearing from you and very valuable insight you shared. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, man.
Anytime.
You.
You'll be back, I'm sure.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.